Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Happy New Year and welcome to Revolution Radio. It's going to look like it's going to be a quiet evening this evening. Remember a quote from John F. Kennedy in his inaugural speech, which I will be also playing this evening, that those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And I happen to believe that we are on the verge of a huge change in America, not the kind that Obama talked about, but the kind of revolution that brings us back to constitutional principles. And in this year, we're going to be talking a lot about what it means, constitutional government governance, and what it means every day to do these things. In any case, welcome everybody. Welcome guest in the chat room. Hope you find someone to talk with, whatever. So let me start with a couple of announcements. The Continental Congress President Michael Badnarik apparently is hopefully been released from the hospital today. He had a heart attack right before Christmas and has been there since then. It's been quite a long time. And he seems to be in very good spirits. He wanted to tell everybody that he's not dying until liberty is, the restoration of liberty is fully underway in America. And he also has a new marketing strategy for his constitutional classes, which is come see Michael Badnarik. He could drop dead at any minute. And so with those two things in mind, I think that he is back and so forth. We're very happy that he is. In a moment, I'm going to play a tribute to him. And the entire Continental Congress is very excited about him being back. We don't know when he will be able to resume his duties, but we have acting president right now and the structure is in place. I also wanted to announce that there's a new Obama executive order going on right now, and that is January 11th. It's an executive order that establishes a governor's council to work with the Secretary of Defense, Homeland Security, and President in coordinating all military-related activities and civil defense activities in the country. It's dependent on appropriations, but of course right now we have a Congress that will give Obama anything that he wants to, so that's a problem. Hi, Julie Z in the chat room. And also, I did want to also welcome those who will be listening to this podcast later on. Now, I'd like to start by saying on my website, I have the Articles of Freedom up for your convenience, and I'm going to post them again right now also for your convenience, and hope you enjoy them. But this is what I would call right now, 2 months away from it, really a strategy plan, a plan for getting our country back into order. What I've found in distributing this right now is that, hang on, I'm trying to do everything at the same time. Here are the Articles of Freedom in the chat room. Enjoy. Oh, heart there too. I got to put that back in. Okay, let me just bounce back to the switchboard. Nobody's calling. Phew, good thing. Okay. The Articles of Freedom, which, you know, are pretty much out in their final form. There are stylistic changes that are happening and so forth, and proper procedures and prefaces being written and so forth. But it really, if you talk with people out there, there is a general angst. People don't know exactly what it is. But if you take a look at these Articles of Freedom, it kind of gives you a structure for what's going on. When people violate about or are angry about how many papers they have to fill out and how many questions they have to answer on things, it's really about the violation of privacy. You can see it that, and that's Article 4 in the Constitution, privacy, and Amendments 3 and 4. And it's very important. Stuff. When people complain about excess government regulation, and when you really take a look at some of this, it really is excess. That's private property and the Fifth Amendment. And when people talk about other kinds of things, like taxes, for example, that's the 16th Amendment. And there's a piece in our Articles of Freedom on that. Now, these were written and were just extensively based on the work of Bob Shultz and the We the People Foundation for Constitutional Education. Like our founders had been petitioning the government for all the violations of the Constitution for the last 15 years and have gotten really nowhere, even just amazingly the requirement that the federal government has to respond to First Amendment petitions was dismissed by the United States Supreme Court. Where do you go with something like that when you realize what is happening? So The petitions have been met with silence, injury, more silence, and really terrible decisions that do not support any of our rights. So we the people organized, and got donations for and had the vision for a Continental Congress 2009, which we could call the third Continental Congress in our history, although don't worry, I'm not comparing ourselves to the founders. But these articles, the Articles of Freedom, were documented the 14 major violations of the Constitution that are underway. We missed a couple of clear discussions that we had to work on. But the idea is, here is the problem, and here is your solution, Congress. If you choose to take this, here's what you do. The states have a lot of work to do, and we the people have a lot of work to do, for alas and behold, when you point the finger at how out of control the federal government is, you got three fingers pointing back at yourself. So, and it is very true that the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. Eternal. And not only that price, well, let me just speak for myself. I haven't. I've been asleep, it seems, most of my life. And now I'm really paying catch up, and, I'm glad I'm not that old. But I definitely feel it. But in any case, we have to get going, and that really is the fundamental, if you will, focus, in my view right now, of constitutional governance. Yes, we must get our government back to the Constitution, and the Articles of Freedom provide a roadmap there, a peaceful, thought-out roadmap. This was not produced by lawyers. This was produced by your regular average Joe citizen who knows as much about the Constitution as any of us do. But knows enough to know in their gut that something has gone wrong. But constitutional governance, there's a section in each one of these articles that is about us, we the people, and we have to start with that. So last week we focused on juries and the Seventh Amendment. And in fact, that's Article 7, how convenient, in the Articles of Freedom. And before I go into a short musical celebration of Michael Badnarik, the basic piece here is, and this is the astounding language of the Seventh Amendment. Of course, they have 1,000 constitutions around here, and when I need it, it's not there. But here it is, Seventh Amendment. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of common law. Common law juries, the whole Bill of Rights, could be seen as our tool for enforcing the Constitution, for the Constitution would not have been ratified for the promise of a Bill of Rights. The states were afraid of a central government. And look what we've got right now. We've got total push and grab for central government. That's why Obama's rule today, trying to get the states now under the federal government, is another assault on the Constitution. We are, when you look at the old writing of the United States Constitution, we are the United States of America, with United not capped, it's not capitalized, small, United States of America, capitalized, States of America. So we really are the States of America, united, to form this Constitution, to authorize a national government to do certain things, only certain things, and we reserve the rest of our rights. Well, somehow we let our government get away from us, and we can't simply point the finger at them. But in any case, the Seventh Amendment says that the juries, regular people, have the power to, there are two votes, the grand jury vote and the Pettit vote. We have the power to nullify bad law, the power to judge both the law and the facts. And last week in our discussion with Red Beckman, it was a fabulous discussion. It was just the two of us, and I encourage you to listen to that podcast. We went over all the sort of practical tools as what it means to be an informed citizen on a grand jury and otherwise. And I'm going to take just a brief moment now to play a theme from the movie The Patriot in honor of Michael Badnarik's journey home. He is thankfully out of the woods, I hope. And we'll just go and play that for a few minutes. It won't last that long. Here we go. Thank you very much for letting me do this. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Michael Bednarik. Long live Michael Bednarik. Long live Patriots. Long live America. Long live our Constitutional Republic. That was the theme from The Patriot. Actually, The Patriot's a pretty good book, too. And it's about what could happen, but I found myself reading through it and actually taking notes because it's pretty good on survival equipment. And organizing and so forth. And a lot of folks at the Continental Congress were familiar with that. And one of the greatest discussions there was about militia and so forth. Now, I'm going to start again with Article 7, just because in our start out with Red Beckman last week, we were talking about, I think it was really a difficulty with plain reading of the Constitution. That's what it was. It was like, here are the articles laid out pretty plain, and they should have been laid out plainly for the regular people, which I think they were, in the language. And when we patriots want to determine intent, of the founders, we're supposed to be able to find it here. And yet, with all due respect to the field of the law, and of course with all due respect to the friends I have as attorneys tell us we can't look at intent, that we're not qualified to look at intent. And that's why we're not qualified to read the plain language of natural-born citizen and look at what the founders referred to in the Constitution, and were apparently not qualified to say, oh, that means not only born in the U.S., but you have to have two parents who are citizens. Well, this applies to the Seventh Amendment, too, and yet the Seventh Amendment is probably one of the clearer places in the Constitution that we can see intent. It is an expression of intent. Look at this. No fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States. That means that when we have a jury, we reach a decision, no court, even the United States Supreme Court, can review that decision under common law. Now, that is intent. What does that tell you about the intent of the Constitution? It was to keep our government at bay. And it was to always make sure that the people had the rule, had the higher hand. This has been denigrated by so many people, but this concept was revolutionary at the time, and it still is now. Because look at what we're supposed to do. This Seventh Amendment gives you and me ultimate power to nullify bad law. We can do that. And no court in the land can review it. When IRS fails to get a conviction, they can't appeal it. Sorry. It takes an informed citizen to know that they've got to beat down all of those accusations on American citizens of income tax. But this was the intent. We were supposed to be able to nullify. We were supposed to be able to control. So there you are. Now, look at what's happening right now. It gives you and me as individuals and us as the citizenry that right. But look at what we have now when you think about it. What we have now, and at any time an assault on our country, we've been told to give up the individual for the benefit of the whole. Now, our Constitution, we gave up some individuality for the benefit of the whole, but only in the formation of a government with limited powers. The rest we reserved to ourselves and to the states. The rest we did that. So, essentially, what we're seeing is like a wholesale assault. It started in earlier than 1914, I'm sure, but 1912, Woodrow Wilson had a lot to do with essentially trying to break down the individualism and the individual rights that were protected in the Constitution and the people's right of government. They're still willing to tear that cut down in favor of a, quote, all-knowing, omnipotent government composed of the elites, attorneys. So this is what drives, as Red was saying, oh, common law drives lawyers crazy, he said. And it's because of the Seventh Amendment here. So you will never hear a judge advise people of their rights to a trial by jury. You won't hear of a judge advising a person in an income tax case that they have a conflict of interest and so forth. So this becomes very important. So the founders really recognized our rights and our needs and built in a way to deal with it. So this, when you think about this, this is our sovereignty. Not just this amendment, but also the other nine amendments to the Constitution. A lot of people will try to divide the amendments, you know, and say, oh, those are just the amendments. The Constitution is what rules. No, the amendments are our enforcement tool, and I don't believe I was taught that. And I sure as heck don't believe that the kids today are being taught that. There is a lot of disrespect being taught, and look at the kind of disrespect. It's weird because it's against individual rights, but it supports individual perversion, if you will, or decadence, or something like that. But I have a couple of articles up on my blog, and if I can get to them, I'll post them. But take a look at Dr. Kate's view. There's one on individualism and collectivism, which has several good videos of G. Edward Griffin talking about that attack. And then I have an article. I mean, it's got such a catchy title. It's called Scientists and Intellectuals and, you know, something else I can't even remember. But there's a bunch of pieces in there on Woodrow Wilson and the role of Darwin and others and so forth in terms of fundamentally undermining the Constitution. So this gets to the Seventh Amendment stuff as well. And so the ideal, of course, is to have a fully informed grand jury and citizen. So in our, you know, what is next and what we do with this kind of stuff, again, getting to what constitutional governance is, it's really important to start getting the fully informed grand jury book, inviting fully informed grand jury people to come and speak in communities, have coffee meetings. I mean, just before this meeting, I was walking around a local store picking a few things, and a friend had called, and I was talking with him on the phone, and I was asking this person if they'd like to join me in doing liberty workshops around Wyoming. And she said, what? And I said, well, I haven't given you the Articles of Freedom. And then as soon as I hung up the phone, three people came up to me and said, what are these Articles of Freedom? What are you talking about? And, you know, and then proceeded to tell me that we're getting really ticked off. We're getting very, very concerned. And so my plan as a delegate is to go to every county in Wyoming and do stuff. You know, and sorry, I just got an email and it took my concentration away. So I think, again, it's right out there, and I can't wait to talk with people about grand juries. You would never think about it. I personally have tried to avoid grand juries or any kind of jury duty, not purposely, but I just always happened to be moving out of town when I finally got the grand jury notice. So now I want to be on a jury because, you know, so what do you do if you're on a jury and the judge, or you're being interviewed for a jury and the judge says to you, are you willing to convict and follow the law even if you don't agree with it? And what if it is a tax case? And what if you know that the 16th Amendment actually was not ratified properly? Are you going to tell the judge, no, I don't believe the 16th Amendment was ratified properly? You don't get on that jury. What do you say? You say yes. Sure. There are a lot of laws I don't agree with. If they're, and if somebody violates that law and that's the way it is, that's the way it is. But if there's a law that's unconstitutional, I have a right as a juror to nullify that law. I want to get in that jury room and educate the other jurors on that. And, you know, there's this touchy issue. Are you lying? Are you not? And then you have to think about where we are as a people. We've got a huge system, really, against us. Now, just think about, for example, the 16th Amendment cases. Every judge in this country knows the 16th Amendment was not ratified. And they're not looking at the information. They throw people in jail and do not allow this information to come into it. They know this. They've got a conflict of interest. They're paid by federal tax dollars. You know, do you think they want to cut off the source of their funding? They have a conflict of interest. Are you going to get advised that in a jury? No. So if you want to think about total fairness and so forth, every one of those judges ought to be impeached for violating the Constitution knowingly so since 1913. So when you think about broad scope, can you get on that jury? And can you do so, you know, without telling a lie? Yes, I think you can, but also recognize what we're dealing with here. And Red says it stronger than I would, but, you know, Red's been around longer than I have. And what the judge is doing when he instructs the jury that you have to convict and so forth is basically usurping your vote as a juror. And when the judge tells you that he can only view the law, judge the law, and you can only judge the facts, he's usurping your vote. And that's what almost got Samuel Chase impeached, convicted. Well, he was impeached, but he was not convicted, essentially. He finally had, you know, he got off being impeached by admitting that essentially everybody knows that the jury has the right to judge the law and the facts. But his impeachment came up because he improperly instructed a jury and threw out some of their verdicts when he had no authority to do so. So that gets down to essentially what our constitutional responsibilities are. Now, let me go further, because it's the instruction to each of the several states, and I want to say this, that the states, in fact, the Continental Congress 2009 believes that by producing these articles and so forth, that all federal officials are basically violating their oath to uphold the Constitution right now. And we believe that is in part with the states as well. I hope it's not the case, but it is. And just for example, I was looking at the Wyoming Constitution pulling down right now, but I won't bore you with that this evening in the chat room. There's a section in here on grand juries that says the Wyoming legislature can disband or call a grand jury. So, yes, Julie, you're right. You're abiding by the law of the Constitution. Thank you. That's correct. But in any case, I found something in our Wyoming state constitution that basically needs changing. And when I look at the remedial instruction to the states, not only does something barren, like, you know, what's here in Wyoming constitution saying, they can do whatever they want with juries, but with the states, too, they have to amend their rules governing civil and criminal cases to require judges to apprise plaintiffs and defendants of their right under the Seventh Amendment to a common law jury, and amend the rules governing these cases and cases where a state is a party to the case to apprise all the jurors of the judge's conflict of interest. So now that means, you know, the boring work of basically combing through the state constitution and looking at Amendment 7 and looking at the Articles of Freedom and finding out those places that have to be stricken. Now, that could be done either through constitutional amendment or referendum or whatever works in your state. But we've got a lot of work to do at the state level because they piled on things there that are definitely not appropriate. To summarize on the recommended civic actions of the people, when appointed to a jury, throw off the restraints of judicial tyranny and refuse to capitulate to any judicial instruction to judge only the facts. And demand that, and you see this all the time, especially on TV and so forth, but the judges and the attorneys all go in the back room and discuss facts. That kind of stuff needs to happen in front of the jury. Because you have the right, the jury has the right to do both. Now, I know this is something very important. It's our third instruction is really to educate family, friends, and community to learn about fully informed jury association. You know, in all of our states, we have different mechanisms. I'm going to use meetups. I am actively talking wherever I am, grocery store, out on the street corner, wherever I can. And it's unusual for me because, you know, I'm the scientist who likes to crunch the numbers and sit behind the scenes and, you know, suggest to my clients that tell them this, but don't tell them I told you that. And, you know, I've had a lot of federal experience. I've had a lot of background experience here. And I know pretty much to keep my mouth shut, but I can tell you that we are in a crisis. And I'm not saying this to alarm anybody or, you know, to raise any idea of conspiracy, although there are plenty out there. It's just we're in a crisis right now. There's no more time. I was going to put up a video on my blog site of, you know, the, quote, stupid Obama voters, but I don't have time for that, and nobody else does either. If you didn't wake up in 2009, you're not going to wake up in 2010. And so I believe that all our efforts to try to convince those people, don't worry about it. Work on those others who are not so vocal. I mean, the three guys that came up to me and, you know, in the store this evening, so what's this about Articles of Freedom? And, you know, they're all of different ages. And this is... You feel it, you see it, you know it, it's out there. And the jury, like I say, if you even talk with people about a jury, if you get are able to get to this point, and just remember, this Amendment 7 is one of the clearest places where the intent of the Constitution, the intent of this whole work is laid out. We still have the power. We are still supposed to have this power. And, you know, we petitioned, we've done everything we can, and every day there's something else ripped, there's some minor word change, but what they're taking advantage of right now is our lack of education. Thank you, Julie Z. I am also alarmed and been nuts, and I actually have been relieved to get off the subject of Obama and get on to the subject of moving forward. But there is no doubt in my mind that we're under attack right now. And frankly, you know, I had a lot of faith that the Supreme Court was going to take these eligibility cases and, you know, the judicial system would work. I don't have any faith like that anymore. And people have been telling that for more than a year. And now I'm worried. And the next eligibility case that comes up, of course, is the Apuzzo-Kirchner case, January 19th, the same day that Scott Brown, we hope, gets elected to the Senate from Massachusetts. So there we go with constitutional governance and the and Article 7. Now, I think the next place to go is really then Article 8, which is essentially the income tax. and part of this, the actions here, I'd love to have the chairman of the Income Tax Committee be here, but I would like to just go over a few things there. with it. So Article 8, because the reason it connects to the juries is because this is where Americans are being sent to jail. Now, if any of you have watched Alan Russo's film, From Freedom to Fascism, Alan Russo died of pancreatic cancer, I think, a couple of years ago. But he interviewed just about everybody in there. But one of the women he interviewed, a former IRS agent named Sherry Kittle Jackson, has been sentenced to 4 years in jail. She's an African-American woman, went off on her own business, tried to get a $50,000 prize for finding the law that requires people to pay income tax. She couldn't find it, didn't collect the prize, but ended up talking about this. She has not been thrown in jail because she didn't pay her income tax. She's been thrown in jail for telling the truth. America has political prisoners. They do not want anyone to know about this. Anybody who talks about the 16th Amendment not being properly ratified gets threatened. Anyone who suggests that you don't pay taxes gets attacked, basically attacked and accused and, you know, sued by the IRS. And if you've read Beckman's book, Walls in Our Mind, this has been a very effective wall. I've seen the evidence. Red Beckman put the book together. I saw the book. There were only two states that ratified the 16th Amendment, and they needed 35. There are only two states that ratified it. So why we get to juries in the 7th Amendment is who is convicting these Americans? It's the juries. The juries who are, number one, not told that the judge has a conflict of interest. They are told that they can only judge the facts. They are not informed. They are not aware that they can actually, with their power, nullify the vote. So right and left, people going to jail. Another individual today was convicted to 135 years in jail. And, you know, this is criminal. Look at how many people have killed themselves over IRS stuff. This happened in 1913. The Federal Reserve, the 16th Amendment not being ratified, and Wilson's move to basically institute all-powerful government and so forth. When you look at the 16th Amendment and the Federal Reserve together, this is where it gets interesting. The Federal Reserve, that's another chapter here, that basically is also unconstitutional because of the money clause in the Constitution in Article 1 about Congress's power to coin the money. I didn't say anything about printing paper. But the creation of the Federal Reserve allowed the government itself to borrow printed money from the Federal Reserve, ergo unlimited growth, but how would they pay it back? Oh, let's falsely ratify the 16th Amendment and pay it back to the people. We were collateral. We were collateral in 1913. And then you begin to see this major shift in the strength of government because the 16th Amendment gave government way more money than before. It was pretty even. Congress didn't have the power to tax our labor. That was actually ruled unconstitutional, and I believe it, 1824, or perhaps even earlier, or perhaps later, whatever. It was ruled unconstitutional to try to tax labor. But in any case, you can see that taking those dollars from American people and paying back the banks allowed the government to grow. So now the government can, for example, say, okay, you states don't get any federal dollars for highways unless you reduce your speed limit. Okay, speed limits needed to change and so forth, and that's probably not the greatest examples, but now the feds can hold out money to basically exert behavior changes in the states. And has gotten out of control. That's the welfare state. It's got completely out of control, and the balance now has shifted. I'm just waiting for Schwarzenegger in California to ask for a bailout for the state of California from the federal government. And there it goes. When I see Obama's executive order trying to set up a governor's council to coordinate national security activities, I begin to see, again, the dissolution of the sovereignty of the states. We're the small U, United States. So, it's remarkable. So you get into the income tax, and basically, the government has been petitioned on this. There was a petition that went forward that, you know, outlined essentially what you have to do. The ratification process is a process that's been established. It's very clear what it is. The illegal pronouncement of the Secretary of State at that time allowed this to happen. I think it was Philander, or maybe it was one of the others. Sorry. I've got the references right here, but I'm not going to open it up and bore you with that. But we've been, the government's petition, they've failed to respond. The 16th Amendment definitively and conclusively failed to be properly and legally ratified, thus rendering it void. Now, it really is true that unconstitutional law is unconstitutional from the beginning of its enactment, since it was unconstitutional from the start. So you're saying this is unconstitutional since 1913. Think of what has happened and the money that has been stolen from Americans. This is 2010, almost 100 years. Only 3 years from 100 years from that of taxes, illegal taxes on the people's labor. That's part of the protection of individual rights and why we made the, quote, 5,000-year leap with the development of the Constitution. It's because when you protect that individual right to earn, to grow, to keep the fruits of those labor, to invest them in future, that's how we made that leap. That's how we became so industrialized so quickly. And so, you know, advanced in a lot of areas and, frankly, wealthy compared to the rest of the world. But wealth internal that was our own wealth. And, you know, people can't stand it when regular people have power. And it's not like us regular people want to exert it over everyone else. I mean, we all want the same thing. In a lot of ways, you know, the same access to opportunities, so forth and so on. But there are people who are power mongers who that is their goal. And so this became unbelievable. So the income tax is currently applied as definitively and conclusively an unconstitutional, direct, unapportioned tax on labor. If you look at the Constitution in Article 1, it says the Congress has the right to lay taxes as long as they are apportioned. They have to be apportioned. These are unapportioned right taxes on labor. Quote, the most sacred and inviolable property of the citizens of the United States is our labor. That the withholding from the paychecks and earnings of citizens is definitively and conclusively unconstitutional. Now, if I get yanked from this broadcast, you probably know why, because I've only just turned the page. So, this is very serious. And this is why, you know, our proposed civic action at the end of this thing, which is essentially to start withholding taxes, only happens when we've got millions and millions of people ready to do this. Because any one of us faces huge risk to do this. And right now, we need all of us alive and out of jail because we need to get our country back. So we have to be very smart about this, but you also have to know the law. Because you're going to sometime, one of you is going to be called to sit in a jury. It's going to be a tax case. And, you know, you might be the only one who has the chance to hang that jury and return a non-guilty verdict. But you will have saved your fellow American citizen from extortion and sheer death. This woman, Sherry Peel Jackson, is also ill, but apparently she's also being given what they call the diesel treatment, being carted around every few days to different jails in the state that she's in. So it's difficult to get in touch with her and so forth. So there are sure many, many rumors flying out there, but look her up. Sherry Peel, P-E-E-L, Jackson. So, anyway, okay, so these were our instructions to Congress. Now, therefore, without delay, the Congress of the United States is hereby instructed to, one, immediately conduct a review of the facts surrounding its ratification and recognize that the 16th Amendment is void. Easy to find. That stuff is out there, and they all know it. But what? Are you kidding? They're going to stop that? Because where do they get their salaries? From us, where do they pay back the money to the Federal Reserve? It's us. This is a crime. Talk about crime of the century. Crime now of almost two centuries. Second, remedial action instruction to Congress. Immediately cease the enforcement and collection of direct, unapportioned income tax on the labor of citizens of the United States. Immediately cease the imposition, enforcement, and collection of withholding of earnings from the paychecks of the citizens of the United States. Next time you're at a Starbucks getting a coffee from one of those people there, ask them if, you know, an extra $30 or $40 in their paycheck would make a difference. See what kind of answer you get. This is what keeps us on the edge, taking those taxes out. And every employer who doesn't take those taxes out gets thrown in jail and slammed and fined and so forth. So you see how they got us. It is a wall in our mind. My goodness. Right, 10 FEMA groups, that's right. Julie, great things in here. Thank you, Julie. I've clicked that link. The fourth instruction to Congress is to immediate release and fully restore all citizens wrongfully imprisoned as a result of the unconstitutional application of the income tax. Those citizens were wrongfully imprisoned because the juries didn't know. And the judges didn't say nothing. And the attorneys said nothing. Nobody said anything that they're being jailed for an unconstitutional law. Can't do that. In theory, although we didn't say this, but in theory, the government needs to pay all of us back and our families back. They need to pay it back. We're not responsible for that debt that they made based on illegal, unconstitutional income taxes. This is why right now we have to deal with this. We cannot let this go on because right now it's more out of control than it ever has been, in my view, and there you have it. I believe that it's crazy. Before I get to the instructions to the several states, I want to just lay out our recommended actions by the people. We believe that tyranny by means of taxation is one of the most oppressive aspects of government and must be guarded against to protect our unalienable rights. Government activity that provides funding for unconstitutional programs is to be considered tyrannical in nature and should be condemned by the people as a whole. So using our money to bail out a bank in London is not okay. That's tyranny. That's our money. They can't do that. And you can't have this thing, oh, no, it's the Federal Reserve's money. The Federal Reserve is neither federal nor is it a reserve. Okay. So we recommend to everybody that you get informed, understand, and research the book called, quote, The Law That Never Was. You can probably find it in your library, Bill Benson. Once you have a full understanding of that argument, please educate your neighbor, family, friends, and all about this. But also, don't forget to tell people about the other side of this. Look at how the government is really using the IRS as intimidation and force. And now when you look at the healthcare situation, they're going to use IRS to enforce it. That's another unconstitutional tax based on another unconstitutional tax. The whole thing must fail. But they're planning on using the same IRS extortion agency to frighten Americans into, you know, accepting this or going to jail. Never mind asking the question, is this unconstitutional? Oh, you get thrown in jail for that too, according to Sherry Peel Jackson, just for telling the truth. And remember, Nancy Pelosi was asked about the constitutional basis for health care, and she looked at the reporter and said, are you kidding me? Are you kidding? We can do anything we want. It's Nancy Pelosi. These people don't care. They're ruthless here. So understand this and explain to people. Now, this is where it becomes very interesting because, and I don't know how it is on the East Coast, but in the West, we have counties and county sheriffs, and they are the last constitutional officer between the federal government and the people. And so the suggestion here is to contact your local county government sheriff and demand cooperation in enforcement of state and federal laws, prohibiting the illegal filing of notice of federal tax liens and the filing of federal tax lien or levy without proper federal court orders attached. It is the duty of the sheriff to protect the citizens of the county from rogue federal agents acting under a color of law. So you look at the IRS showing up in your driveway, fully armed, ready to take all your stuff. Where's the court order? You call the sheriff. The sheriff's going to stand there in between you and the feds and say, where's the court order that allows you to do this? They must have that. You have those rights. They cannot show up at your door and do that. But your sheriff's got to know this information, too. So you've got to get to your sheriff. There's Ashley, and on my blog, on the blog roll, there's a link called the Sheriff Project, and I'm going to start that too here in Wyoming to find out how constitutional your sheriff is, because that can protect your neighbors. You know, they have to, they can't do this to you. But we are so frightened. We've been told forever, obey. That it never even occurred to us that maybe that's actually not a constitutional law. Here's another thing we recommended. To put their banks and employers on notice that federal income tax levies should not be honored without a federal court order attached and without an affidavit from the sheriff that the levy is legal and proper. See how that works? You work with the sheriff. You know he's there. You know, federal tax liens just happen. I mean, you're given notice and then bam, it's gone. Where's the court order? Where's the court order? They can't do that. Maybe the IRS law allows them to do that, but you know what? They can't do that because it's a complete violation of the Constitution, others of our rights. So the sheriff has to be there to help. So that's why you've got to get to your sheriff, or I don't, like I say, an East Coast constable or something like that. And then four, recommendation to the people, prepare to replace any sheriff or county or state government officials at the next election or sooner through impeachment or recall who refuse to cooperate and honor their oath of office to protect and defend federal and state constitutions and the people. Look at your state constitution. Look at the United States Constitution. The oath that these officers hold to uphold the Constitution. If Amendment 16 is unconstitutional, they don't have to uphold it. No judge is required to uphold an unconstitutional law. So that's where you get my statement and Red's statement, which is like, holy cats, every judge in this country who's ever listened to a tax case should be impeached. It's very serious here. And you don't have to be law enforcement to be a sheriff. Of course, that that helps. But what we're talking about here is standing up in county meetings, in city meetings, going to your sheriff and saying, hey, what about the Constitution here? What about what's proper? What about your oath? What part of your oath are you upholding? Make it mean something. That's what these Articles of Freedom are supposed to do. It's upholding your oath, Mr. Sheriff or County, is to make sure that my stuff doesn't get taken without a proper court order. And you've got to be there to back those feds off unless they have a proper court order. If they do that, okay, fine. But you've got to be there to help protect. That's your constitutional oath. So, the fifth piece is be prepared to withhold their income tax from the government once the above steps of self-defense are in place. So what they're saying here is, you know, if you can get this going in your community and that works for people, and you've got that strength of understanding, try it. However, you know, like I say, understand what the risks are here and understand that what, you know, these are recommendations, these are not directions, and we don't expect anyone who signs this document to be withholding income taxes, you know, this April. That is not what this document is proposing. It's really, if everyone begins to get to know this and they talk with their representatives and senators about this, we will make some change. If the senators and representatives refuse to listen to it, well, then they're going to have to get out, be voted out, and so forth. But the bottom line is what the government is afraid of is the people knowing. And this is what you must do. This is why we are here today, is we're trying to point the finger at the government and three fingers pointing back at us, and we're going, oh, my God, how did that happen? What did I not know to let this happen? So, and then finally, really, the public is advised to contact their county sheriff, state, and federal representatives and senators demanding the unconstitutional taxation and withholding of earnings be stopped immediately. This has to happen nationwide, en masse, and so forth. So you see how much talking we have to do to get there. But these are logical actions that we can take. These are constitutional actions that we can take. We are advising everybody what the heck is going on here. We are giving the states and Congress an opportunity to deal with this before people can't afford to pay income taxes anymore. It's like, okay, health care or income taxes, what am I going to do? Or food. You know, I know if I had, you know, family, I couldn't get do all those things, you know, I defer something, you know, probably would not, you know, well, I'm not going to say anything because I want to finish this show anyway. If I'm not on next week, you'll know what happened. But now with the states, we have to repeal any and all state income tax laws to the extent that they are based on federal revenue laws. So if your state income tax is based on federal income tax, that's got to be repealed. And that can be done under the 10th Amendment. That's not going to bring you know, anyone totally down on you. And the states must begin to do this. If they're going to stand up and if they want to be in our government, they're going to have to start honoring their oath. Here's another piece. And, you know, you can imagine this, what impact it would have if, for example, it was a referendum. But instruction to the state number two, preserve, protect, and defend the liberty and property of its citizens against unconstitutional seizures by the federal government pertaining to unlawful collection of income taxes. You heard that about the state and the county and local officials. Start local, but it has to start. And three, cease the unconstitutional imposition and collection of state income tax based on citizens' labor. So here's a couple of cases. I'm just going to read one quote. Compensation for labor cannot be regarded as prophets within the meaning of the law. The word, quote, profit, unquote, as ordinarily used, means the gain made upon any business or investment. A different thing altogether from mere compensation for labor. That's ours. That's what we're saying is unconstitutional. You cannot tax our labor. That's been ruled unconstitutional early on in the 1800s, later in the 1800s, and in the 1900s as well. Compensation for labor cannot be regarded as profit. But your investments and all that stuff, yeah, that can be regarded as profit. Those kinds of things can be taxed. But labor cannot be. So really, we've got a lot of education to do with the several states, for sure. And that involves, like I say, the very boring work of going through the state constitution and pulling out any of that stuff. And the very exciting but tedious work of really meeting with your sheriff, talking with your neighbors, talking with anyone you can on this issue. Right now we have to do more talking than they do because they've got more resources, TV and so forth and so on, for all of this than any of us do. Hang on one second. Get rid of that call. Okay. So this becomes, again, part of constitutional governance here for us, we the people, is to get educated. When you think of the Seventh Amendment and the 16th Amendment, you have to realize that it is very important for the protection of our fellow Americans that we become informed about this. And whatever you can do to get this information out is really essential. Now, so what I've gone through so far is Article 7, sort of a review, and Article 8 regarding really our rights as the people and the essential intent of the Constitution. And the intent of our founders can be found in Amendment 7. It can be found in the Declaration, in the preamble. We, the people, they meant it. They provided protections for us in here. And the shriller or the more the opposition ignores these amendments, or the shriller their arguments against them become, you know you've hit a nerve, because these are essential to eliminate, to get control of us. Now, I'm just going to take a very short break here, and in honor of the people, I'm going to play one of my favorite songs. Let me see if I can find it here. Fanfare for the Common Man. That was very much a theme of the Continental Congress. It's been a theme of mine for a long time since I first heard the song. I think it so honors Americans. And take a short break, and I'm going to put this on, and we'll be right back to finish up the show. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, Aaron Copeland. You know, I'd now just like to have sort of just a quick wind-up of news and discussion. The chat is very interesting. Julie, it's just been great to have you as a chat partner there. And, you know, so it's just been you and me. I assume there are plenty of other great shows on. And it's good that we have podcasts. But really, the pace of events is picking up. They hit the ground absolutely running last January 20th, even before then. And look at how much damage they've done in just a year. And executive order after executive order has come down the pike. And now we've got this situation where we've got terrorists attacking us inside our country, and we're being told to shut up about it and be politically correct. And it's going to take a lot of courage for people to call it what it is, terrorism, and to stop being politically correct or worried about Major Hassan's, you know, social life in Texas. Well, for heaven's sakes, let's stop being politically correct. And how serious it is that some of these things that are now filtering down to us regular Americans and looking ridiculous, what are these people doing? Where are the defenses? Where are our courts? Where are some decent citizens up there who are going to put an end to this? Our president has failed to prove himself. Actually, he's not my president, so the resident in the White House has failed to prove that he has the ability to be there. He's flaunting it. Who knows what's in Congressman Deal's letter, but thank God he sent it. Where are the rest of these? But, you know, part of me has almost no faith in Congress. What did he ask for in the letter? Why can't we see it? And how much is Obama going to offer him if, you know, he shuts up about it? Because Congress has every right to initiate an investigation now. And I hope that whoever Republicans or whoever is going to be running this year for the House and Senate sort of gets a clue that if you initiate an investigation and get to the bottom of this, you're going to earn a lot of people's respect, more so than if you continue to play along with the game, because right now I don't see any of them having the guts to stand up. Deal, yes, he did. But here's another piece that I think is just dastardly. If the Republicans are playing along with this just for the game, and they're hoping to just like clamp onto the Tea Party people to get elected, and then try to go ahead and run Bobby Jindal in 2012, I'm telling you, it will then be understood why they allowed Barack Obama to run. It's because Jindal is not a natural-born citizen. But can you imagine if it was Jindal this year? The press would have been all over it. The whole discussion would have been about whether he was a natural-born citizen or not. Did we hear a peep from the press because it was a Democrat? It was Obama? No. So Jindal, they better not try to run him. But, you know, you can see the idiots say, well, Obama ran, so he can do it too. So what are we to do? They all should be thrown out of office. All should be arrested at that point because they failed to uphold the Constitution. This is absolutely outrageous. I was a federal employee for 8 years. I took an oath to uphold the Constitution. There are millions of people like me. What is going on in this country that no one is doing anything? We have traded our liberty for security. You know, I've heard on many shows, and pardon me, this is one of the few times I've had a chance to rant on my own show. But really, I've heard a lot of people say, well, if you do that, all the lights are going to go off. Okay, well, if we keep all the lights back on and Obama takes everything from us, what? Are you happy you have lights or you have any freedom left? And, you know, it's going to be a very tough point, I think, for people, because it means stepping out. It really does. And it doesn't mean defying the law. It means standing up for the law. We are supposedly a nation of laws, not of men, not of individuals, not of women. a nation of laws. But unless we are willing to take this on, this is serious. Yes, I agree, Julie. They'll try to push Bobby Jindal. I've heard several people say that Mitt Romney is the sheer winner. But if they try to push Jindal, I would have to say we would absolutely have to revolt, because then it was the whole conspiracy since 2006 to get Obama in, and to defy the Constitution and to change it and to bankrupt the country. And then what can we do? You know, they'll throw us in, martial law. I think this is another piece that we have to watch out for. There are a lot of people who are ready to explode. That's exactly what they want, is some stupid behavior. What we've seen is primarily Muslims doing Uzi jihad. We don't need American citizens in their, in their frustration with this to do the same thing. But that's the kind of thing that Janet Napolitano and, Barack Obama and, some of these others, some of your governors who are going to participate in this new, federal government governor task force on coordinating security and responses to civil unrest. That's what they want. So we're going to have to, again, have a framework to move forward on. And I'm very positive about that. I went to the 9/12 march, and, I've said this before, there were more people in one block in that city than there are in the whole state of Wyoming. It was really funny. But the signage there was not, screw this and dump that and, chicken this and so on. All of the signage from those 2.1 million people, all of them had the Constitution written all over it. It was the Constitution. So I believe that the giant is awakening. Here we are. And that if we take this, if we start working these articles of freedom and move forward, it's just going to continue to build momentum. But no doubt, they're going to increase the stress on us this year. And if you look at the Mayan calendar and even other traditions, you will see all of them saying everything's going to be speeding up a day. Just look at what happens in one day. I mean, for me today, I stayed in one place, but my goodness, I went everywhere. Even more so than I have in other days. And this seems to be picking up speed, and consequently their effort is to pick up speed. So know that they're doing this. Cloward Piven, stress all the government agencies so they can't handle it. Just stress them with welfare payments. Do this constantly. So you see this constant attack and this constant stressing all the agencies. That's what healthcare is going to do. It's going to be impossible for the government to respond to this. Stress personally. See Obama every day on the TV. Have his liberal cohorts and all of these others and Homeland Security call us crazies and radicals and sore losers and racists. Excuse me. And whatever else they can. And then to use Alinsky in our face all the time. Send the ralliers, the Black Panthers. And then you have, of course, the Justice Department bringing in Muslims to our country, people who've tried to kill us, and giving them rights here. Excuse me, just a second. I was reading an investigation on Major Hassan and of the Fort Hood massacre, and he had been known to be having communications and so forth with radical clerics, and had been known to want to kill, soldiers, and felt that he was protecting life by killing the soldiers and so forth. But you know what they concluded? They concluded that it was harmless and it was speech protected under the First Amendment. And they want to call us or me a racist for saying, hey, I think you're not constitutionally eligible They're giving American rights, constitutional rights, to our enemies and denying them to us. Now, this is all part of the big confusion smokescreen because you can hardly believe this is even happening. What are they doing? I mean, no really honest, decent American could even think this could happen. It took me a long time to believe that Obama would even do this. Because it just never occurred to me in my whole life that someone of that deceit would get to that place and that it could be covered up so much. It's just is shocking to me. And so now, you know, part of this Cloward Pivot and part of Alinsky in your face stuff is this absolutely turning things upside down, denying your First Amendment rights, but giving them to, you know, the terrorist who kills us. There's a case of two Navy SEALs whose trial has been moved to Iraq, not here in the United States. And now we're trying to get more prisoners in the United States and so forth. It is just unbelievable. Edwin Vieira, in an article in 2008, maybe 2007, entitled "Obama Must Stand Up or Get Out Now," and listed 9 major issues with an ineligible president. Right now, we don't have a country. Right now, we don't have any laws. Right now, no treaty that Obama signs has any validity. No law that he signs has any validity, whether the law is constitutional or not. He doesn't have any validity. And so, you know, we're told to look at these other things. This is another reason. Bring up health care. Bring up cap and trade. Bring up this. Bring up that. Look away from eligibility. Don't you have anything else to work on? No. Sorry. The Constitution is not a menu. It is not a menu. This is a basic violation. I thank God for what's going on right now. So I'm going to wind this down. Because if I don't, I'll be with you all night. I'll probably be talking. All of you will be asleep, and I'll still be talking on my show. So at this point, I am going to say goodnight and to welcome you to join us next week for another edition, really, of Constitutional Governance. I will have probably the chairman of the Sovereignty Committee joining us to discuss that piece. It's a big piece on the New World Order, but how does that boil down to us and constitutional governance? And I want to thank all of you for coming this evening. Those of you who will be listening later, my friend Julie in the chat, thank you so much for coming. Please spread the word about the show. God bless America. God bless our troops. And God bless you all. And going to close with I don't know, with the song called Hope, I think. Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Hey, 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 hey Here I am.